whether it be a car, a boat, or an airplane, and you drink, there's going to be consequences when you're caught. Because people are dying in this state every day because people drink and drive. I believe it's a policy question. We have to send the message. It is not all right to drink or operate a vehicle and drink. It is not. People are dying. We've got to take a strong stance in this state, and I believe that this is an area that we can continue to take that strong stance. Thank you.
Representative Jacko, prime sponsor of the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I certainly don't mean by introducing this amendment to advocate that one should be allowed to drink and drive, or that's a good thing to do. I'm very much concerned about that also, but I think there really is a major difference between a person's fishing boat, which I consider to be a large part of their livelihood, and an automobile. Taking away a person's fishing boat would be similar to as if perhaps someone who owned a gas station was operating their gas station, and they were intoxicated, and someone came along and took away their gas station. It's not only their home, at sometimes it's their place of business. It's a lot more than just a transportation to and from someplace. So I would ask that it be excluded.
You ready for the question? Representative Kay Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry, I need clarification on exactly what there was reference made, and I entered the chamber in the middle of the debate to an amendment to the amendment. I only have number 2 on my desk. Yeah. I just appreciate clarification as to what we're voting on.
Would the clerk please read the new amendment number 2?
New amendment number 2, delete or watercraft in sections 29, 30, and 31.
Mr. Donnelly?
You have a short of these.
Stand these. Representative Donnelly, you wish the floor?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd be very concerned, and I think there's a legitimate issue raised by the proposed amendment, but the law would only allow the confiscation of this property, is my understanding, speaking with the sponsor, after the third conviction. So there's no chance at all that somebody who just had 1 or 2 DWI convictions would ever be subject to this penalty. Additionally, in speaking with the Attorney General's office, the old law has very seldom been enforced. I mean, the main thrust behind this law was to act as a deterrent and to simply send a message to people, as the speaker from North Pole indicated, that this is very serious behavior and this is a possible consequence. And by all means, it's no absolute consequence that it go through the judicial process. And I think all the meritorious concerns of the members of the body that have expressed concerns are going to be available during the judicial process also.
Other members, Mr. Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for this second opportunity. We are certainly all in favor of getting people to correct aberrant behavior as regards excessive use of alcohol or any substance abuse. The thing that concerns me, Mr. Speaker, is when we pass so many laws trying to, what I would say, gridlocking individuals into a certain lockstep method, sometimes it opens up cracks that people fall through. And let me give you a hypothetical. And it's not so hypothetical in my district, because I do have people who live on their boats. I do have people who go out into different bays, anchor up, and have a six-pack of beer or whatever, and they stay there. Sometimes they stay there for a week, sometimes a month, sometimes just a couple of days. But they anchor up in the bay, and that's their home. And now, if somebody can convince me that this law is not sometime in the future going to keep that person from doing what he wants to do on his own boat, which is his house, his transportation, and his livelihood, then that hypothetical doesn't count. But that's the situation I face, Mr. Speaker, and I think as we continue to pass so many laws to restrict behavior in this state, and I am as much as anyone else in favor of tightening the laws on drunk driving or excessive substance abuse. But there are situations that I think we have to consider, and therefore I'm in favor of this amendment.
Mr. Gall.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to speak briefly in favor of the amendment. I think that the comments made by the sponsor of the legislation are particularly important and will probably come up again in other contexts before we're done with the bill. This is a very important piece of legislation. It does not primarily deal with watercraft or even aircraft issues. What it primarily deals with is a restructuring of the penalty system having to do with DWI, and I've become convinced it's a pretty important piece of work, and I won't go into, I won't elaborate on the merits of the bill right now, but I think it's got a lot going for it. And one of the things that has happened in the process is there have been a few things that have sort of gotten tagged on, and one of them is the issue of DWI and watercraft and how it should be handled. Some of the issues that were raised in Judiciary Committee got resolved, some of them didn't. Some of them, like this one, were not really raised at all. I think that we would be very, very well advised to keep the bill clean, take off the controversial parts, shoot it through, and try to get it passed, and deal with the issue of watercraft as to its impact on driver's licenses, its impact on confiscation of vessels, what kinds of standards should be applied regarding, you know, if somebody's living on the boat and all this sort of thing. These are serious matters that merit serious attention. And I don't think it speaks at all against the seriousness of those matters to delete this at this time. On the contrary, I think that what we need to do is what the sponsor recommended, have a piece of separate legislation dealing with watercraft safety. Let's give it the real committee, you know, scrutiny and get it passed. And I would just urge members to vote this amendment up. Let's pass it. Move on with the bill. Thank you.
Representative Hoffman, do you wish the floor?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe with, as the representative of North Pole, that we do have a lot of serious problems with alcohol in the state, and we should be very concerned about the actions that we take. But I would also agree with the representative from Haines that we should probably look at this particular issue in at a later time, and maybe as the female representative from Juneau said, there are other pieces of legislation that that it could be addressed in, and the Judiciary Committee can address them at that time. I want to support this particular bill, but if the amendment fails, I would be forced to vote against the legislation. Thank you.
Mr. Hudson and Mr. Taylor.
Thank you. Just briefly, Mr. Speaker, as I understand this, the third DWI could be acquired by two times in a car and one times in a boat. I'd like some understanding of that, because we're talking now about boats, automobiles, and I guess no longer airplanes. And my question is whether or not, if someone was convicted of two DWIs out on the highway, and then the third time was maybe at a DWI and operating a boat inside the waters, would the forfeiture of the boat be the forfeiture, or would it be an automobile, or would that be subject to the courts? And it's been my understanding that this is primarily for public safety, that is to take the vehicle off the road as opposed to simply be punitive, but maybe it's both. I'd just like someone who's a sponsor of the bill to let me know if my two observations are correct.
Representative Taylor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rarely have the opportunity to stand on this floor and speak along with my colleague from Haines, and I really wanted to follow that up. And in answer to the former speaker, it's my understanding, and the only point I wanted to make by speaking is that the way the DWI law currently reads, it's your third conviction within 10 years. It does not specify the vehicle or type of motorized craft you were operating to acquire those two previous convictions. And I've personally seen people who had two DWIs literally 9.5 years ago. Now they have their third DWI. Those people lose their license for 10 years, and a lot of other things happen to them that are very punitive in nature. And I think he's correct that you could have two on-the-road convictions, and they could be 7 or 8 years ago, back when our society did not quite treat this issue in the same fashion that we have. And I've been one of the people on this floor that has voted consistently for and sponsored legislation to enhance the penalties. But as we've changed these things, we now have this retroactive effect back when people may have been in some other state that treated it very lightly, and now are living here with us. And I too have a large constituency of people that operate vessels, and I would like to think that before we get into this third phase of taking and forfeiting vehicles, I don't like the forfeiting of any of these vehicles, to be quite frank with you, under this provision, because it retroactively jumps back too far, and I think our purpose is to go after conduct that's going on today. Thank you.
Other members who haven't had a chance to speak yet? Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question that was brought to my mind by the Speaker, the Minority Leader to my right. And I'm not sure where he's coming from, so perhaps he can address the question through the chair. If I'm not mistaken, the original drunk driving legislation certainly did not have a retroactive effective date. I do not believe that you can reach back in time prior to the time a law is put on the books. But yet I am led to believe through the comments of the minority leader that that's what's happening, and I do not believe that's true. And I would certainly need some documentation to be shown that.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Taylor?
But I think it's only fair. A question was asked, and it's my understanding that is correct, and though the term retroactivity is not applied, I believe that it does in some ways violate some provisions, and I have very strong concerns about the manner in which it relates back. But it very definitely does relate back, and it relates back to convictions not only in this state, but in any other state. So that is a true statement. It's a frightening one, but it's true.
Representative Ulmer?
Mr. Speaker, that provision of the law is not being changed by House Bill 53. For purposes of whether or not it is calculated as a third, fourth, or fifth, or sixth DWI, a given time period is included in the statute. That was done years ago, and it's for purposes of allowing people to, quote unquote, start over again. I think it envisions sort of a circumstance in which young people perhaps may make mistakes, may get involved in a number of DWIs, and then later in life, if they happen to get one, if it's happened beyond 10 years, they get to start over again, as opposed to it being something that accumulates over time. So again, that's not being altered in this bill.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition to the amendment. I'd like to identify with the remarks made by my colleague from Midtown. I'm not sure that we have any of our constituents living in cars, but we indeed have constituents who reside in motorhomes. And I think perhaps along the same line as the representative from Kodiak, they may pull up with a six-pack and stay there and not be on the road, but at the same time, that would be their residence. And so I think that this bill should treat all of these vehicles fairly.
Mr. Jackal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I failed to mention earlier, and it is my understanding that if there were two previous DWIs in an automobile, and then there was a subsequent DWI on a boat, that would you could possibly take the boat away from the person. And I also wanted to draw a distinction with a representative that spoke directly before me. If an individual had two previous DWIs, and say, for example, it was during the middle of the summer, he was fishing, he anchored his boat in the boat harbor, went ashore in a dinghy or something, went to the bar, had a few drinks, walked back to the boat harbor, went and got back onto his boat, which is his primary place of where he's living. And the boat is anchored up, say a storm came up and he had to move his boat, but he was drinking. in that situation, he would have to move his boat, but he could possibly lose his boat from moving it to try to save it. So.
You ready for the question? The question before the House is, shall amendment number two, the new amendment number two, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please void the roll call. Are you ready for the question? The question for the House is, shall the new amendment number 2 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
21 yeas, 14 nays.
Amendment number 2 has passed. The bill's back in third reading. Mr. Taylor?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I'd ask the privilege of the body to move back to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment.
There is objection, Mr. Taylor.
Yes, thank you. Just briefly on the amendment, Mr. Speaker, shift gears for everyone here for a bit. This is adding a new provision within the right of the state to deny or suspend a license. It's used in California. It's also used in Oregon. And what it basically does is it allows the licensing agency to suspend a person's driving privilege within this state if they have failed to pay either a civil or a criminal fine or judgment owed to the state of Alaska. It saves a tremendous amount of money, and it recovers a tremendous amount of money that would not otherwise be recovered. As a former member of the judiciary, I can attest to the fact that we frequently and continuously waste the time of judicial service officers, state troopers, that have to go out and serve summonses for people to appear and explain to the court why they've not paid their fines. And as a consequence, I think this thing will work very well. I believe the bill will be held in reconsideration until Monday, and I would like to place this in it because I think it does some good service to the bill and accomplishes something very good for the state and for the courts and so on. But there was concern there might be some fiscal hold attached from the court or maybe from the Department of Public Safety, and we could find that information out between now and Monday. So I would ask the consent of the body to move back. Thank you.
I would just remind the body that when we move to go back to second reading, you're really not allowed to debate the amendment at that point, but to extend a courtesy to the member that wishes to move back, we usually extend the privilege to describe the amendment, but prefer to withhold the advocacy for that amendment during that period. Are you ready for the question? The question for the House is, shall House Bill number 53 be returned from third to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment, that being amendment number 3. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? The clerk, please take the roll.
22 yeas, 11 nays.
Bill's back in second reading. Mr. Taylor?
Thank you. I'd offer the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
There is objection, Mr. Taylor?
Yes, I briefly made the remarks I felt was necessary. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
All right. Representative Ulmer?
Mr. Speaker, the bill that is before us has been debated for about 3 years, and I have only seen this amendment for about the last hour, so it's a little hard for me to really gauge what impact it will have. I do not have a conceptual problem with what the person who has offered this amendment is attempting to achieve. My principal concern is how it would actually work as a practical matter. Currently, this bill has a zero fiscal note. I'm not sure that it would continue to have a zero fiscal note, and so I'm a little concerned about what the implications would be in terms of going back to a finance committee or a review by any other committee. Mr. Speaker, it would be fine with me if the body wishes to adopt the amendment. However, it would be with my understanding that if it would mean that there would be significant fiscal impact, which we would determine over the weekend, then I would request that the sponsor of the amendment would withdraw the amendment on Monday. And with that understanding, I would remove my objection to the amendment.
Representative Gall.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I guess I appreciate what the sponsor of the amendment is trying to do here and have no real difference with the idea on first reading. but it is very much for me a first reading too, and along with the sponsor, I've had an opportunity to spend considerable hours on this bill. And one of the two of the issues that we've tried to be on the right side of, I guess you'd say, is to keep it from having an additional cost, and also from avoiding adding things to the bill that distract from the preliminary or primary intent of the legislation, which is to revise and improve our DWI statute. I guess to me, to add a section that deals with qualification for a driver's license and adds this particular clause is an interesting idea, but I personally would prefer to see it dealt with separately or in a piece of legislation that deals with qualification for a driver's license and not be added at this late date, at this time, to this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Ready for the question? Question before the House. Shall amendment number 3 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
26 yeas, 8 nays.
Amendment number 3 has passed the House. We're back in third reading. Are you ready for the question? Representative Grusendorf.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've been sitting here for several hours very silently listening to the debate on this piece of legislation, and I am not going to vote for this bill today. And the reason I am not going to vote for the bill today is the penalty section that is in this bill. My concern in penalties is what we call behavior modification. And when I look at the penalties, I don't see that. In other words, from a sociological point of view or a psychological point of view, it just doesn't have the deterrent that I want to what I call a rational individual. Now, in the legal world, they will take a fine structure and they'll run it down, and the only thing they're concerned with is that there are less offenders at the second than the first and on down the line, kind of a funnel type of effect. But there's problems in that because that's kind of a vortex. It sucks it down. In other words, you get into what we call the behavioral riddle. And the behavioral riddle in this case is, what does the second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth offender have in common? They're all first offenders. That's what they have in common. So I'm concerned about the behavioral modification and, as I said, the rational man or individual. Let me give you, for instance, Mr. Speaker. I would dare say in this room, anybody who drinks or drives has probably found themselves in a position of having a lot of luck, and had a policeman been handy, would have found themselves at offense number one. But being a rational individual, if they got away with it, the next morning they might say to themselves, boy, I was lucky. I am not going to do that again. Well, that's a very intelligent person. He made it home. He conscientiously said, boy, was I lucky. But then, for some, that doesn't work. You know, you may take a situation, well, the individual where it works on, he may say, well, I'm going to moderate my habits. I'm not going to drink so much, or I'm not going to drive. That still is a rational individual. But let's say this person here decides that, well, you know, I was lucky, and my luck's going to run with me. All of a sudden, through a vicarious experience, one of his friends gets picked up. Now, if he's a rational person, he'll say, oh my gosh, my friend got 3 days in jail, and on and on and on the fine. Now, if he's a smart person, he'll say, hey, my behavior is going to be moderated by that, and I know it's an effect on all of you. But let's say that you go out with this friend, and this friend are out, and it's your car, and that friend says, and you say, well, I'm drunk, let's call a cab, and your friend that's already had the first offense says, oh, heck no, you know, I'll drive you home. Well, you know, using poor judgment on the part of the owner of the vehicle, says, yeah, go ahead. So his friend gets picked up again. Okay. Now, the person who had the car made a bad judgment on his part, But the person that drove the car and got the second offense, there's a problem there. And so what I'm saying is when you go down the spiral, the breaking point, or what we call the threshold for penalties, would probably be the second offense. Because once you cross over into the third offense, you're talking about a person, he or she has a problem. How do you get people to recognize that they have a problem and to deal with it? It's usually at the second or third offense that you do it. Because those that have a problem or a dependency upon this particular drug are going to continue to go on down through this thing anyway. You got to stop those that are intelligent enough to say, hey, you know, next time we go together and we're going to take a taxi cab. Finally, he smartened up and he didn't get the third offense. But if he gets the third offense, then he's got to, you know, then there's definitely has a problem. So, and then some of you say, well, heck no, you know, the penalties are such, you know, we can run them down to the sixth level, you know, run them down there. Well, you know, that's fine too, but there's one consequence here that as this body we've got to be aware of. If we're going to moderate or modify behavior, we also are responsible to the people that this individual may run into contact with. Either he'll injure himself or kill himself, or maybe more tragic than that would be to injure or kill someone else. Probably the most, the worst thing I could possibly think of, to injure or kill somebody's dog. So, Mr. Speaker, I guess what I'm getting at in this, and I've been listening, you know, and I thought, geez, everybody else seems to have such a good time up here talking that maybe I'd take some of their time and maybe run a filibuster and see what they like on behavioral science. Because believe it or not, one of the most fascinating sciences they are in relation to behavior, social psychology, it's a combination of everything. You know, sociology, you have behavior of, you know, groups, and psychology, behavior of individuals, and you mix them up, you got some. What I'm saying, Mr. Speaker, is this penalty clause, the way it is structured, doesn't do what it should do. It should come in at the threshold, at the second DWI, and then anything after that, you know you're definitely dealing with a person with a problem that cannot recognize and make rational decisions on that. Most of you, at an occasion, have made these rational decisions by, as I said, watching what happens to somebody else or getting that first one. But I'm not going to vote for this, mainly because of the penalty section. It is wrong. Legally, it may look good because it runs down. But from a behavioral science point of view, it does not, because that's not how you alter behavior in a youngster or in a dog or in people.
Mr. Schultz?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I am also going to vote against this legislation, but primarily because I'm confused. This is the craziest conglomeration of votes on amendments that I think I've ever seen between liberals, conservatives, etc. And I'm not exactly sure what this bill is going to do right now. I believe that over the weekend that I'm just simply going to go back, reevaluate my sanity, my principles, and try to figure out if this is a good piece of legislation to vote for Monday.
Mr. Hudson?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to associate myself with the words of my friend from Sitka. When we heard this in transportation, I believe that so many of these repeat offenders have an illness, a sickness, and they need that help. And I've been looking through this, and I haven't read it all myself either, so I have to associate myself also with my friend from Chicken or Toke or wherever he comes from. In that it really, I believe that we do have to have a strong word up front when somebody is showing these kind of actions out on the public streets there, and you've got to stop it up front. And I don't think this thing does it. I think this thing tries to finesse it all the way down, and then it really hits them hard. It really puts them into jail for a long period of time. So I have enough problems with it where I don't believe I'm going to vote for this either. But it's primarily because I just don't think that it corrects the behavior of the individuals who are sick, not necessarily criminal.
Omer, the sponsor the bill.
Mr. Speaker, there's obviously a lot of confusion on the floor today. I'd like to just try very hard in the last few moments here that we spend on 53 today to do something about that confusion. First of all, with regard to sickness, this bill does provide that a court may require a convicted defendant to participate in rehabilitative alcohol treatment programs. So for those folks that really are in a situation where they need help, this legislation they should vote for because it allows a court to require that that person get some help. Secondly, with regard to the additional time spent in jail for repeat offenders, the reason we are increasing it for 4th, 5th, 6th DWI offenders is twofold. One, to get them off the roads longer so that they're not providing the threat to innocent bystanders, whether they be human or animal. And secondly, to say that this kind of behavior, if you continue to do it, is more serious than if you do it once or twice, so you should spend more time incarcerated. Moreover, if you spend more time incarcerated, you can get a treatment program that can possibly really deal with your illness. You're only going to be away for 20 days or 30 days. You're not going to have as an effective treatment program in terms of it really sticking. So the reason for the graduated penalties, again, is to recognize the increasing severity of the conduct, to allow the treatment program to really take hold because you're away longer, and to make it safer for the people who are out on the street who don't want to be hit by a drunk driver. So that's the rationale. Now, the concern expressed by the speaker from Sitka regarding whether we're hitting the first or second driver hard enough. Well, Mr. Speaker, if there are members on this floor who would like to increase the penalties for the first or second DWI offense, let them offer them in an amendment form. I think you can make a good case for hitting folks harder the first or second time. But the purpose of this legislation was to make more rational the repeat offenders, because those are the folks that are out there re-offending and offer, I think, a much greater threat to society, and for whom we should allow the kind of treatment to take place that this bill authorizes. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Other members who haven't spoken yet, Mr. Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When I started my review of this legislation this morning, I looked for several things in order to make a decision. One was, does the bill serve as a deterrent to substance abuse? And the answer was yes. The other was it an equal application of the law? And at that time, the answer was yes. Mr. Speaker, I like the bill because it did have somewhat of a balance in it. And my question asked earlier today, using an example, did it include certain tankers or whatever, was designed to at least encourage some discussion on that issue and let this body know fully what it was doing. Perhaps I should not have asked that question and let the bill just go ahead and we would have included at least the watercraft. But Mr. Speaker, to make an exception in this piece of legislation, in my opinion, defeats the equal application of the legislation. As has been previously stated on this floor, we have persons in South Central Alaska for various reasons, be they homeless or whatever, may live in a motor home. That may be their only source of abode. But if they're caught the third time with in charge and convicted of a DWI, under this legislation, they lose the motor home.
Mr. Speaker, point of order.
Representative Ulmer.
That's
point
under
of order.
Current law. It is not under this legislation.
Thank you. Well, prefer to
Speaker,
raise that in debate rather than a point of order, Representative Furness.
Well, I mean, my point is made here. Under the current law, these people, they will lose the motor home. That's their primary dwelling. They have perhaps no place else to go. And so to exclude under this legislation watercraft because a person may live in that watercraft, again, in my opinion, present to us an unequal application of this legislation. Mr. Speaker, I think that's wrong. And I think this bill has at least a number of other flaws in it. And I would certainly suggest here that as these bills come through the committee structure, that we pay a little bit more attention to these kinds of details, and hopefully we will not have to debate them as extensively on the floor. But let me close by saying this, Mr. Speaker. Recognizing the problems with this legislation and what I see as an unequal application of the law, I believe it does address at least my first test, and that is it a sufficient deterrent for substance abuse? And I believe we've made a commitment that that is very important. A person who drink and drive kill people. They destroy property. They destroy lives. And so with that in mind, Mr. Speaker, I'm going to support this legislation today. I think we have a commitment to support this legislation today. Thank you.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When I looked at this bill last night, I had planned to vote for it, and I find that as a result of the adoption of the amendment number 2, that I'm going to have to vote against the bill. And the reason for that is that in addition to being unfair, and in addition to the fact that we are applying a law unevenly and unfairly, I think it raises some additional concerns and confusions that I think would lead to further litigation. And I'm thinking about the instance where a fellow is driving a motor vehicle and has an offense, and finally reaches a point where the next time he does it, he's going to have his motor vehicle impounded. Instead, the third offense occurs with the watercraft. Then that means that under the way I understand the amendment is that on his third offense, he would get a free walk because he happened to have the third time he was caught, he happened to be, or she happened to be, piloting or licensing or whatever a water vehicle instead of a motor vehicle. And so by adopting the amendment, you've given that person a free ride if, in fact, they are operating a watercraft. So I think that's some confusion that I think is untenable. But I think the worst part of this bill is that this bill was introduced with the purpose of trying to solve or resolve or control a serious problem that we have. And instead, what this bill does, it punishes some people and excuses others. And when we're talking about modifying people's behaviors, the worst thing we can do is to give them excuses and give them chances to opt out of consequences that arise as a result of their behavior. And I think that's the worst kind of message we are sending by having amended this bill. I urge the members to vote no. Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think that comparing someone that has a motor home and someone that has a boat isn't a valid comparison. And there's a distinction here, and that is that most people that have motorboats don't have licenses to drive. If you have a car, you have to have a license to drive. If you have an airplane, you have to have a license to drive. And for most people that own boats, they don't have to have a license to drive, so I don't think that that would be a valid comparison.
Representative Ulmer.
Mr. Speaker, somehow we're getting more confused here instead of less confused here. We have not created an exception today by adopting the amendment. The exception exists in current law. If you want to look at it as an exception, what current law provides for is that you can forfeit your automobile after your third DWI. You cannot forfeit an aircraft. You cannot forfeit a watercraft now under current law. What we've done today is we've added aircraft in addition to cars, okay? The only thing we didn't add was watercraft. So we have not somehow changed or given somebody a break. Current law says car. Today we have said car plus airplane. Maybe someday we'll say car plus airplane plus watercraft. But we are not somehow letting people off. We are adding an additional group in. So for people who are concerned that somehow this makes it lighter or less, it doesn't. We're adding additional to it, okay? So for folks who are voting against the bill for that reason, change your mind, erase it. We're not creating an exception, we're adding to it. The bill doesn't just penalize people. That's another important point here. This bill allows the judge to order treatment. Currently in Alaska, he can't. As a result of a Court of Appeals decision, he cannot order treatment for people who need treatment for drug and alcohol offenses. So, ladies and gentlemen, I would suggest that, you know, if you're having problems understanding what we're doing here today, take the weekend to think about it. But this bill represents significant progress in our opportunity to levy offenders rationally based on the severity of the offense and provides a treatment alternative at the same time. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Boyer?
Gosh, you know, I'm glad that I missed a couple airplanes and more glad that I missed the debate on this issue, because I thought I knew exactly what I was coming in here to vote on this morning. And what I was voting on, or what I hoped to have an opportunity to vote on, was filling a bucket full of water and dealing with, you know, getting the whole bucket full. And I'm going to be happy to walk out of here with two-thirds of a bucket full, and I hope I catch my plane tonight at 5:40. I intend to vote yes on the bill.
Mr. Gall?
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I just would like to draw members' attention briefly to page 2, line 22, which might make a little bit of sense in the context of the discussion that the representative raised about groups being excluded. The language of original law, or of existing law, in section 2 of this bill, it's also the same examples on line 19 of page 2. You know, shows that what they originally had in statute was essentially a limitation on many of the aspects of this bill to folks who were driving vehicles for which a license was required. And what the intent of the committee was to extend it, or to make it a little bit more clear, and to have it include aircraft, another vehicle for which a license, although not a state license, is required. And there was some question about how that would apply. So it was the intent of the committee to add, and certainly not to create specific exceptions. And I think that the comments by the sponsor are pretty germane, and the last speaker as well. What this bill does is it does add some pieces to our law. I think it adds some good ones, and it obviously doesn't add everything. While I have the floor, Mr. Speaker, though, I'd like to indicate my feelings on the bill, if I could. I had some concerns earlier about it when I first started to review it. And I think that what's happening in here is really quite interesting and worthy of our consideration, because it not only adds penalties for DWI, but it also reduces penalties for driving while a license is suspended. And when you speak to the Department of Law, or the Department of Corrections especially, about the issue of prison overcrowding, which they are going to be bringing increasingly to the attention of this body, because what we do have is a very serious criminal justice problem, and I kind of wish in a way that I could go on at length. I won't, but the point is that our criminal justice problem in terms of budget is also going to be with us as we talk about limiting our overall spending, and something needs to be done to make sure that we're dealing effectively with people, for example, who get picked up for drunken driving. I think it's important that some of the penalties in the bill were reduced for DWLS to allow for, you know, in a manner of speaking, increased penalties for this more dangerous act. And I think that a lot of the discussion today has raised a very important question. I was especially intrigued by the remarks from the representative from Sitka as to behavior modification. I'm taking this time, Mr. Speaker, because I think other bills are going to come before us that raise problems of public safety, or raise problems of directing people's behaviors in society. And one of the things that I think is a failing of this state and most other states is that we haven't really found successful ways to go beyond the incarceration model to change people's behavior. And I think one of the questions that this bill raises, and that's going to have to be debated in the years ahead, and I'm going to take the liberty of bringing it to the attention of the body now, is to really assess to what extent incarceration does lead to behavior modification for specific crimes, to what extent it leads citizens to engage in new criminal activity, and to what extent these treatment methodologies that can be now, under this statute and under another bill which we're shortly going to consider, these can be applied. Let me say that again, that while these people are in jail, you can treat them. Are those treatment methodologies successful, and how much do they cost? What I'm driving at is, as we deal with more social problems and we try to correct them, and we try to correct them by increases in criminal penalties, I think at some point that this legislature has to take as a primary order of business assessment of to what extent those methods of correction are in fact working and to what extent they are not. Because you will see that within the next few months, as we discuss the budget, and certainly within the next few years, as the limit on spending comes in direct conflict with the services we're trying to provide, we're going to have to examine our overburdened justice system and our overburdened correction system and make sure what we're doing works. What you see here is one of the first attempts during this legislative session to restructure sentencing. And what you're going to see later in the session are bills dealing with the establishment of a sentencing commission. The reason why we're going that route is because when we try to take each of these individual cases, we have a lot of trouble figuring out alternatives to simply saying, let's lock them up longer. And we're going to have to examine those alternatives, examine these treatment programs, and make sure what we're doing is effective. I commend the work of the sponsor on this bill in trying to improve the system, modify sentences for a particular problem, and it's for that reason that I've spoken against amendments and tried to keep the thing simple to the point. I do apologize to you, Mr. Speaker, and to the members for taking so much time on this comment, but I think this is just the debate today should be proof to everybody that this is not just a matter of ignorance or the phase of the moon, as one member said to me in a note, but rather this is evidence of the very serious questions in the minds of members as to how to best use our criminal justice system to change dangerous behaviors in the state. And once again, I must repeat that as the budget crisis, which is coming, begins to grow, this area of criminal justice and corrections and how to be sure we're doing the right thing when we try to make ourselves a safer society are going to be a major topic. And I'd urge members to remember today as this develops, because I think this is just the first indication of some very serious and important debates to come, and I hope that there'll be debates that unite us rather than divide us. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Gusner.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I never realized what pleasure it is to inflict pain upon your fellow colleagues in debate. But bringing back to the penalty clause that we have here, on the first offense, talking about 3 days in jail and 90 days loss of license. Now, the younger you are, 3 days in jail, you can handle that. What is the real punishment there? 90 days without a driver's license on the first offense. On the second offense, losing the driver's license for, you know, 1 year. That is where you get the young person in relation with the behavior modification. The jail sentence really doesn't mean that much. It's kind of embarrassing, but at the same time, he might be there with a lot of his other peers for other offenses. I mean, it's the type of thing that when you're young, you know, they kind of take it for granted that it may happen to them. I'm looking at this schedule here of penalties, and I think you probably all have seen it in the back of your the bill histories there. What I'm driving at, Mr. Speaker, is that the first and the second offenses have to be stiff enough that the young driver and that the conscientious, rational adult will weigh very heavily the fact that they'll lose their driving privileges for 90 days or 1 year. Now, if you look at the earn back type of thing, well, that's nice, but we could technically have a person on his first offense getting his driver's license back in 30 days. Well, a lot of young people can sit for 30 days at the television set and not even really miss it. And when it's 90 days, then that person's going to do a little bit of walking, and I recommend it. And I am not happy with the penalty clauses on the first and second DWI and will not vote for the bill.
You ready for the question? The question before the House is, shall committee substitute for House Bill number 53, Judiciary Amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
27 yeas, 8 nays.
House Bill 53 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll move and ask unanimous consent to the roll call vote on final passage be considered a roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage be the roll call vote on the approval of amending Alaska Rules of Appellate Procedure 603 and 611D, which is in Section 34 of the bill and requires two-thirds vote.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the Rules of Appellate Procedure have been adopted as well. This is the end of the day's calendar. Mr. Minority Leader.
Yes, thank you. I just served notice of my reconsideration committee substitute for House Bill 53, Judiciary Amendment.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on House Bill 53. Is there unfinished business to come before the House? Mr. Majority Leader.
Nothing that can't wait.
Under unfinished business, I'm going to give an additional referral to the Finance Committee for House Bill 409. Are there unfinished business? Are there announcements? Mr. Hudson?
Pleasant announcement. The American Legion is holding a reception. It's just a block over here, and we're all invited from 5 to 7 this evening.
Other announcements? Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On Monday, Monday's the last day for introduction of personal legislation. We'll be having a technical session Monday afternoon to make sure that everybody has an opportunity over the weekend and through Monday to get that in, and so get it in as early as you can, and that's the last day.
Mr. Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Judiciary Committee will take 20 minutes for lunch and start at 25 minutes after 2. We will take the bills in the following order. House Bill 459, which is the appropriation for the litigation on Amarada Hess. House Bill 224, Veterans Preference. House Bill 318, the Fair Campaign Practices Act. And if we can get to it, Senate Bill 92, which is motor vehicles.
Other announcements? Mr. Larson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our subcommittee meeting on the foundation formula programs that was scheduled for 1:30 today will be canceled, but we will meet at 1:30 on Monday.
Other announcements? Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Finance Subcommittee on the Department of Commerce and Economic Development will be meeting earlier today than indicated in the schedule. And the schedule is 4 to 5. I believe it's at 2:30. Thank you.
Are we special orders? Representative Bars.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I request the privilege of the floor to speak on honesty is the best policy.
Without objection, Representative Bars, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it has always been my position that honesty is the best policy, and as my children were growing up, one of the things that I taught them was that it is always better to tell the truth than to tell a lie, because if you tell one lie, you're likely to have to tell another one to cover it up. And pretty soon, you have forgotten who you told the last lie to, so you continue the lie. I hope that that wore off on my young people to some extent as they were growing up. And Mr. Speaker, I'm sure that most people know that once I give my word, I keep it. Makes no difference what the cost to me is personally, because I believe so strongly in honesty. And in that regard, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to speak on House Bill 245 that passed this legislature in 1988. That was Chapter 50. That's the Permanent Fund Dividend Bill, where we took permanent fund dividend away from incarcerated felons. Mr. Speaker, at that time, the Department of Law worked very hard on that bill and appeared before all the committees that addressed the issue. And one of the things that we constantly tried to do was to make sure that this bill was constitutional, that it in fact met the constitutional challenge that all people under the same category was treated equal. So, Mr. Speaker, in that vein, the way we did that was say that incarcerated felons would simply not be eligible for a permanent fund, would be counted by the Department of Corrections, and that number would be set aside. Mr. Speaker, as you know, that's what happened. And then we get down to last year, and this is the subject of my special orders today. Honesty is the best policy. Last year, we had before us $1.5 million that had been set aside, or would be set aside, from appropriations, from what would have been appropriated to felons from the permanent fund dividend. Mr. Speaker, this legislature chose last year to use a portion of that money to fund a fiscal note on a crime victims bill that was the prime sponsor, a gentleman from Spinard. And the rest of that money, $780,000, went to the original intent of the legislation that had passed. The original intent said that it was the intent of the legislature that the Crime Victims Compensation Fund would receive their funding from the permanent fund dividend of the felons. Mr. Speaker, it cost us some $40,000 a year to keep a felon in jail. And Mr. Speaker, we all know that if you do some simple mathematics and you say they're in jail for 5 years, that's $200,000. Now, if we gave them a permanent fund dividend in the amount of $800 a year after 5 years, we would have given them another $4,000. But we chose not to do that. And Mr. Speaker, last year, in addition to the $770,000 that we gave to the Crime Victims Compensation Board, we chose this legislature to fund the we gave $150 per felon as gate money. The reason for that, Mr. Speaker, was because of a court settlement that we're all aware of that said if in the future the permanent fund dividend was not available, then we should have gate money available to the felons as they depart prison. And in addition to that, I believe that we funded $480,000, I could be wrong about the amount, to the sex offender treatment program. Mr. Speaker, everyone in this legislature, and I believe in the administration, certainly knows that whether it was written clearly in the budget or not, that those funds should come out of the permanent fund of the felons. Department of Revenue, on their own initiative, chose to fund that money out of the permanent fund of all the people of the state. My reason for bringing this up today is that there has been a member of this body that has seen fit to go around telling people in this state that I personally am to blame for that money coming out of people's permanent fund dividends last year. I'm sure that a person would not do that if they had all the facts at their disposal. That's why I'm choosing today to bring all the facts to the disposal of this body and to those that might not have been here or might have forgotten. Because the next time someone says that I am personally to blame for that money coming out of the dividend checks, I will stand on this floor, Mr. Speaker, and tell this whole body who fabricated that story. Thank you.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I please have the privilege of the floor to speak about youth?
Without objection, Representative Collins, you have the floor.
I'll be real short because I know it's late, but I thought it would be nice to end this long day on a positive note. During the time that I've been in the legislature, I've worked very hard to identify and to try to remediate some of the problems that our youth have. And this body, I think, has done a wonderful job of trying to do that, trying to fund services that troubled children need in order to be able to reach some kind of a reasonable adulthood. When I talked to the Department of Health and Social Services, they indicated that fiscal year 1980, we spent about $100 million on 20% of the kids. And that sounds like a real skew, And I know that might raise some concerns for people, but actually I really support that. We need to work with kids. We need to help kids. And I hope that we continue to pay attention to children and fund their needs. But one thing I think that was brought to my attention last week was by a young child who said, nobody ever talks about us kids who aren't doing bad things. And so I thought that that child was probably right, and that sometimes we forget that there are kids out there, probably about 80% of them, who are doing the right thing and who are not being recognized. And I'd like to just name a few of them for you today because they live all over the state. One of them is Jana Hewn from Fairbanks. She's 16. She's the chair of the Alaska Teen Leadership Focus, and she volunteers in her local hospital. We have Dawn Samuelson from Fairbanks, who's age 16, and she's the chair of the organization committee for the Teen Leadership Focus. Sarah Pugmires from Anchorage, she's 15, she's active in church, and she is on the Teen Leadership Focus Planning Committee. Amber Ella is from Kenai. She is age 16. She's the 4-H Alaska Ambassador to the National 4-H Conference. She volunteers at her local newspaper. Dwayne Craig is from Kodiak, and he was chosen as the International Exchange Ambassador to Germany. Today I introduce House Bill 503, which establishes a mechanism to somehow recognize these children in reinforcing their positive behavior. And I think this is a way of saying that we know they're out there, we know they're doing good things, and that we appreciate them, and that we care about them too. And I would just urge the members to let those kids out there know that we know they're doing a good job, and to co-sponsor the legislation. Thank you.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd ask for the privilege of the floor to speak on recognition of a job well done.
Without objection, Representative Hanley of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last summer, a group of volunteers tackled a project in spite of being told that it couldn't be done. They expanded their numbers until there were Alaskans across the state who joined with them. Then they began. They began collecting signatures, Mr. Speaker, to place the question of making marijuana illegal on the ballot in November. Again, they were reminded that the necessary number of signatures could not be gathered by volunteers, that people would have to be paid if this issue was going to succeed. They refused to be discouraged or deterred. They were thanked by many, cursed by some, and threatened by a few. But it was a true grassroots effort, Mr. Speaker. They were people from all walks of life. In fact, a grandmother and grandfather in Anchorage led the charge. Together, they collected over 4,000 signatures. There was an accountant from Fairbanks, an attorney from Sitka, a minister from Valdez, a community action group from Ketchikan, an airline worker, and a retired legislator from Juneau. The effort continued through the 1st of November. Then the books were mailed in. The count began. There were 20,343 valid signatures that were needed to put this issue on the ballot. When the final signatures were collected and the total was counted, there were 42,000 signatures. 42,000 signatures gathered by volunteers, gathered by Alaskans, and they represented every district in the state. Mr. Speaker, we could have prepared a citation recognizing this outstanding effort and commending their achievement. But many of us, because we realize that legislative support of ballot propositions has been shown to increase the potential of victory, many of us decided to introduce this resolution. We are proud to join the Alaskans statewide in supporting this initiative. There are 21 sponsors. I would invite the remaining members of this body to join with us in supporting House Concurrent Resolution number 50. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like the privilege of the floor to speak on the issue of making felons pay their debts.
Without objection, Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Many times during the fall, after the dividend checks became available to the public, I was approached by outraged parents who said, who's responsible for having my daughter pay for sex offender treatment programs? Did you vote for that, Mr. Boyer? And who's responsible for my daughter paying for gate money for some criminal, some felon? Is that you, Mr. Boyer? Are you responsible for that? And I'll be the first to admit that I said no. And I'll be the first to admit, and I don't need the, Mr. Speaker, the representative from East Anchorage to threat exposure on the floor. I'll say to anyone who wants to listen that I lay the blame squarely at the feet of the representative from East Anchorage. And that's why I personally have introduced a bill that I think is a more responsible approach to making felons pay their debts. That bill is currently making its way through the process. I think it's responsible. We take about $3 million or $1.5 million from felons in their permanent fund dividend through the permanent fund dividend check, and we lose about $3 million in debts that are owed to victims of violent crimes, the court system through fees and penalties, other nonviolent victims, and children. And I think that the approach that I am trying to take through a piece of legislation is responsible. And I'd only like to end by saying that those of us who live and breathe and grow old in Fairbanks evidently have thinner skins than those from East Anchorage.
Should we invite this dispute to go outside, or? Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, may I have the privilege of the floor to speak on thin skin?
Without objection, Representative Barnes, on thin
As
skin.
As most people will note, my skin is not thin. Were it thin, I would not have the guts to stand up here on this floor and call the person a liar that's lying. Now, Mr. Speaker, last year when the money was appropriated from the victim or from the felons, that money was not appropriated by one member of this legislature. Certainly, I supported the appropriations from the felons to those worthy causes, as so many others did, Mr. Speaker. I stand by the bill that passed this legislature, Chapter 50, 1988, and I believe firmly that it is the only constitutional way that you can take the permanent fund dividend away from the felons. You cannot, under the tax law, have them separate classes, as the bill the gentleman just spoke about indicated that it was a better way. Mr. Speaker, you must treat all incarcerated felons exactly the same. You can't give part of their money, I know I tried this, to the families of the victims. You cannot give parts of the money to the court system. You cannot give parts of the money to anybody. You have to declare them all ineligible and have the money set aside to be appropriated by the legislature to a specific cause. Now, if you want to appropriate it back to other sections of the public other than that which we chose to appropriate it to, that's one thing. And I take the responsibility as the prime sponsor of that bill. But I will not allow any human being to say that I am the cause of what the Department of Revenue did. The Department of Revenue, on their own volition, chose to take that money out of everybody's dividend. That was not the intent of any of this legislature that I'm aware of, nor would it be the intent today if we appropriated that money and a court challenge was raised, to have it be the responsibility of the Department of Revenue to take it out of the permanent fund dividend of all the people of the state. I don't mind being blamed for what I am responsible for, but when the representative from Fairbanks says he's not responsible, I got news for him. He voted for the budget, I didn't. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The man with the striped shirt, Mr. Boucher.
10 seconds. The people said, no matter what the program is, keep your cotton picking hands out of the permanent fund. That's why we introduced the legislation today. So if you want to support these other programs, support them out of the general fund. Otherwise, let the people vote on it.
Mr. Minority Leader?
Yes, I request the privilege of the floor to speak on history.
Without objection, Mr. Taylor.
As the first co-sponsor on the piece of legislation referred to by my colleague from Anchorage on my left, I debated that on the floor of this House and was opposed by my colleague from Ketchikan. Had quite a heated debate about whether or not money should be removed from felons in the form of taking their permanent dividend fund checks. Those of us who supported that legislation were successful, and we saw it pass into law. But I can still hear hauntingly, ricocheting around this room, my colleague from Ketchikan's comment at the time. How will you be assured that the $1.5 million will actually go to and be appropriated by this legislature to the Victims Crime Commission? We know now, he was absolutely correct in that, that somebody would see that money and they would reach out and they would grab it for another purpose. And if somebody in this body wishes to blame someone and to inform the public of how it occurred, I suggest they look to the third floor instead of throwing brickbats back and forth among us. Because those of us who were here and voted for that legislation know why we voted for it and know what the intent was. It was to put $1.5 million into the Victims Crime Compensation Commission. It was not to be utilized by the Department of Corrections for their various programs, nor was it to be used for any other purpose. But unfortunately, those words have now come true. How can you assure it? You can't. But we shouldn't be casting aspersions on one another when the fault does not lie within this body, it lies upstairs, except to the extent that members of this legislature voted for a budget last year that did that.
Anybody else? Mr. Ellis?
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House stand in adjournment until 11 a.m. Monday.
We're adjourned until 11 a.m. Monday.